Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I'm doing good. Today I received an email. It was about 2 hours ago. Ashley, with an MIT email address. Okay, what is this about? Dear Jean-François, question from a journalist. I'm a journalist at Undark magazine, and I'm currently working on a story at the intersection of genetics and race. And I was like, oh my God, a journalist, Ashley from MIT, probably a high IQ intern in some journalistic class. Holy shit, I know how this goes. Come here, Ashley. I'm going to take good care of you. I'm going to talk about race to you all night long. I'm going to talk to you about the whites, talk to you about the Asians, talk to you about the blacks. Anything you want, baby. And then, okay, so I read through her email. And then I'm like, holy shit, that must be a top woman. She's hanging out on 4chan. She followed the memes around me. She seems to be making an obsession of me. You know, she tracked me. Because people were referring to me as a race scientist in 2019 4chan post. I'm like, holy shit, this will be interesting. And so I'm Googling her name, and here's what I see. Oh, no. Oh, no. You're telling me that you are the one out of a million people who's a guy, a black guy named Ashley. You stole everything from me, Ashley! All of my dreams! Ashley Smart is the associate director of the Night Science Journalism Program at MIT and a senior editor at Undark Magazine. Undark Magazine. Interesting name. So I was totally shocked. That being said, you know, as an artist and a scientist, I must put my emotions on the side and respond to his scientific questions. I have to say his now, because I have now discovered that Ashley is a black man. I have been blacked. I've been fooled by a black man here. Who presented himself to me under different pretenses, which led my brain to fantasize about everything that could have been between me and pink journalist, female, super female journalist, Ashley. It was all created in my head. That being said, here's his email, and I will use the opportunity to give you guys in a kind of exclusive, because his article is not published yet, but so you're going to know in advance what I told him about race and IQ, because it's been a while. We haven't talked about race and IQ on this show. I find it annoying that people will contact me only on this subject. It's like, you guys are supposed to be frustrated that I'm talking about this subject, yet every time you call me, it's to get a hot take on race. Like, do you realize that this is much more important than race? Why don't you call me to talk about this? This is an important theory of the emergence of life. How about Ashley writes a journal paper about this at MIT? Anyways, let's read his message, and I will give my response. He says, I'm a journalist at Undark magazine, and I'm currently working on a story at the intersection of genetics and race. In my reporting, I came across the attached table, which looks at alleles associated with educational attainment and compares them across races. It looks like the table was posted in a thread on 4chan back in September of 2018, and it was archived by 4plebs here. So he sends me this table. I've already seen this table circulate. I've not commented much on this table because I haven't had the opportunity to look into the details of what was this done properly mathematically. But I will tell you, this is a table that I had suggested could be built. And in fact, I had even promised to the internet that I would do it. And it was just too much work. It took too much time. I had started it. So back like 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, somewhere in 2017, maybe, I had promised that I would do the correspondence of the SNPs related to intelligence and whether they are high frequency or low frequency in a given race. I never could get around to it. However, someone else did it. Someone else did it on 4chan, and that's the result of it. And someone else did it, and we'll get to his scientific article later, but Pfeiffer did it. David Pfeiffer. And so there's no reason for me then to honor my promise anymore. Two other streams of data have been addressing this question. I'm glad to be relieved of this task because it was hard to make. I was just not having the time to go through it. In any case, he sends me this tab that he found on 4chan. So it's a tab that says, okay, this specific letter of DNA, Europeans are 1,000% more likely to have this allele than Africans. And of course, those are all alleles that have been established as correlated to intelligence by GWAS studies. So he says, it looks like this table was posted in a thread on 4chan. And a comment from the 4chan thread stated, JFG is a PhD in neuroscience and biology, and he does it. So cry more, undergrad. Which would suggest that you might have had a hand in putting the table together. Or at the very least, have knowledge of how it was created. Well, I never put this table together, but I was probably the one suggesting originally that it should be done around 2017, and somehow a 4chan artist did it. So I'm kind of involved, if you will, but I'm not involved in the processing of the data. I'm just involved because I commented that this should be done and this could be done. That is the story of it. He says, also, an old YouTube video suggests you might have proposed a similar ID in an old episode of your podcast. He sends me this video.
In a recent video, JF mentioned two genetic datasets. The first one is a recent study by University of Colorado published in Nature's Genetics, listing a few thousand SNPs, or genetic loci, found to be correlated with high educational achievement. The second set is a compilation of 1,000 genomes from 26 populations across the globe.
I have never seen this video. So it's basically an automated reading machine that's describing my video. Well, fascinating. So the video that I had done back then is not available probably on the internet anymore because of the deletions of all my channels of those days. So yes, but it does refer to a real video that I've done, and I did talk about the 1,000 genomes and database and the GWAS studies, and I said we would need to do correlations, see if we can find anything statistically significant. Of course, since then, in 2019, that was maybe a year or two after I talked about it, there has been this paper by David Pfeiffer, which follows up on a previous paper that was the same principle, but with a smaller data set. But here he has done the 2,400 genes, that is SNPs, that are known to be associated with intelligence, and he has looked at them through the populations from which they are high frequency and the population in which they are low frequency. So that's not a correlation of the genes yet. It's just a correlation between the educational attainment measure and population IQ overall. Eventually, he gets to a GWAS significance quintile. So here you have genes that are much more linked to intelligence, genes that are less linked to intelligence. And he does a correlation between the polygenic score on the y-axis here and the educational attainment. So basically, the link between what we can guess from your genes and your educational attainment, the link between educational attainment and population IQ, and the R's which are indicative of a high correlation. The R's that are above a certain line would be R's that are significantly indicating a significant correlation between the prediction made from the GWAS S&Ps to the population IQ, the population performance at school, or whatever it is that he's using there. And so to me, this is perhaps the best expression in terms of a well-explained method of the original idea that I had proposed. Polygenic scores for 52 different populations. And here you can see Japan, Russia, Colombia, African, basically pretty much everything. Everything that was available from both the 1000 Genomes Project and other databases that he had also added. And so the conclusion of this article is that there are very high correlations between the IQs that you could guess from their genes and their IQs that we measure in their country, such that the information gathered from a European study mostly on mostly European people and people who live in European nations can be extrapolated in terms of the finding the single genes that are linked to intelligence. And when you go into a different population and you try to apply what you've learned, you make correct guesses, which means, and we'll get to my response to him, but I just wanted to show you what is the data I'm basing my response on. He continues in his letter. He says, "Were you involved in making the table? And if so, would you be willing to tell me about the methodology you used to create it? I gather you took the list of alleles found to be associated with educational attainment in this 2018 GWAS study and cross-referenced them with allele frequencies for African and European superpopulations as measured in the 1000 Genomes Project, but I can't be sure exactly how that worked, in part because the 1000 Genomes tool seemed to no longer be active. Any insight you can offer are much appreciated. Happy to talk by phone or Zoom if you'd like. Best, Ashley, Associate Director at MIT, Senior Editor of OnDark Magazine." So my response to him based on some of the... Before I get to my response, let's see what you guys have said in the chat. Spindly Opinion says, "The two sub-Saharan African populations I hold the most hope for are Tutsi from Rwanda and Igbo from Southeast Nigeria. Those populations have completely different outcomes to American blacks in the U.S. Really? I don't know much about them, so you'd have to inform me about all this. All right, so continuing to my response to Ashley. I said, "Hi, I had no hand in making this table. However, I did suggest in an old episode, which is probably not available anymore, that this type of data analysis could eventually be made. In the end, it seems, based on the Excel sheet picture you sent me, that someone may have done it on 4chan. I also know that the expert in this kind of analysis is David Pfeiffer, whose most recent work on this question can be found here." And I sent him 4 different links to ResearchGate articles by Pfeiffer, including this one, which is the most updated and most recent one, "Evidence for Recent Polygenic Selection on Educational Attainment and Intelligence Inferred from GWAS Hits, a Replication of Previous Finding Data," in which he finds that... The PGS from the largest GWAS was highly correlated to two previously pre... Okay, no, this is not the final result. It says the analysis of this sample yielded a positive correlation with latitude and low negative... That's not the result I'm interested in. Let me just try to find where he states it. These factors are both highly predictive of average. Okay. Monte Carlo simulation yielded highly significant p-values. In the GNOMAD samples, the correlation between PGS and IQ. Okay, so it's the correlation between PGS and educational attainment and PGS and IQ. Very high correlation. R equals 0.96. R equals 0.8. for learning, and R equals 0.98 when looking specifically at the correlation between PGS and IQ in the specific GNOMAD subsample. So those are extremely high correlations that indicate that the genes that we found to be associated with intelligence in GWAS studies, they are externally valid. You go find them in the African population. You compare them between the African population and the American population, and you end up with, yes, this gene predicts intelligence across different countries, across different groups. All right, continuing with my answer. So I gave him the four paper, and I said, I'm attaching Pfeiffer's paper to this email in case you don't have a login at ResearchGate. The general idea of this research, both that of Pfeiffer and what seems to have been done in the PNG you attached to your email, is quite simple. We have an increasingly precise characterization of the correlations between single letters of DNA that differ between people and the level of intelligence that is to be expected of people having those letters of DNA as opposed to other letters of DNA. We have obtained this knowledge from studies called genome-wide association studies. The idea is to take hundreds of thousands or millions of people, characterize all of the letters of DNA that differ among them, and then see if we are more likely to find certain DNA differences in the people that are lower in intelligence as opposed to the people who score higher on IQ tests or educational attainment measures. For instance, if a GWAS study finds that some DNA letter, which we refer to as SNP, that is a single nucleotide polymorphism, i.e. a DNA letter that can take many forms, if one of these DNA letters is more likely to be found in higher intelligence people, but less likely to be found in lower intelligence people, it will characterize this DNA letter as being positively correlated with IQ. Out of all the DNA letters, the vast majority of them will not be correlated at all to either high or low intelligence. One moment. However, a handful of them often end up being found that are significantly linked to intelligence. In the original GWAS study, we could find 10 to 40 DNA letters that pass the statistical threshold. In today's larger studies, we can find about 2,400 such letters, out of the 2.3 to 3 million that differ within the human population. So we have about 3 million SNPs. We have 2,400 of those that are letters of DNA that are known to be associated correlatively to intelligence. Each of these letters has a very small correlational relationship to IQ. Having one of the good letters might be associated to a plus 0.01 IQ variation, while having a bad one might be associated to a minus 0.01 IQ variation. However, if one stacks these small differences over more than 2,400 DNA letters, we can now calculate a score for an individual which allows us to predict even without prior knowledge of the individual, whether he is likely to be intelligent or not. The predictions are not perfect, but are definitely statistically significant and accurate to a degree. We call the process of summing these small inferences and trying to predict someone's IQ from their genes the polygenic score. The line of research of Pfeiffer and presumably the individuals you have encountered on 4chan seeks to address a question. Are differences in intelligence across groups under genetic influence, as is the case for the differences in intelligence within groups? Or is the difference across groups caused by different mechanisms? The question arises because of the contrast of the availability of quality methods to investigate the two questions. On the one hand, you have within-group differences, which is, why is it that two white persons would differ in their intelligence? And then you have the other question, which is across-group differences, which is, why are white people on average different from black people on the measure on average? For the first phenomenon, the within-group differences, we have found decisive scientific evidence because we can perform twin studies. These studies leave absolutely no doubt that intelligence, as measured by educational attainment or IQ test, is caused by genetic differences. The question becomes more complex when asking whether across-group differences are caused by genetics. We do not have the same ability to answer this question using twin studies, because there are no homozygotic twins that are of separate races. By definition, they share the same genes and will be of the same race. There has been two ways to approach this conundrum. One approach is to believe that unless strong evidence to the contrary is provided, one could assume that across-group differences are caused by genes too, since there is no reason to believe that the mechanism linking genes to intelligence would be so widely different across Europeans and Africans that they would cause intra-group but not extra-group variations in intelligence. That is a reasonable approach to the question, but one that does not satisfy very much, mostly because it is based on speculative logic. Pfeiffer and others have been wondering if we could find a method that does test scientifically, however imperfectly, whether genes could be the source of the difference of IQ between Europeans, Asians, and Africans. For this, he has taken the DNA letters that were shown to be associated with higher or lower intelligence within populations, and he has looked for these letters in populations from other groups. What he found is that the genes associated with lower intelligence in the GWAS studies also are found at higher frequency in low intelligence populations, and the genes associated to high intelligence are found less frequently. All in all, these studies show that the polygenic score calculated from large GWAS studies has what we call in science external validity. They correctly predict, to an extent, the intelligence levels for populations that were not part of the initial study, the GWAS. They also suggest that racial differences in IQ may be caused by genetic differences that have built up in the populations of different races across the past tens of thousands of years. As for your question regarding how the 1000 Genomes Project genetic information could have been used, I would point out that the research by Pfeiffer has been done a few years ago when the database was available online. It would not be surprising that the SNPs could be found somewhere on the internet, given that it was publicly accessible back then. In any case, the method used by Pfeiffer and how he obtained this information is documented in his articles, which I have attached. I remember consulting the 1000 Genomes Project website, and I remember that it provided a full characterization of the SNPs in each populations they studied, so presumably this is the information that allowed calculating the frequency of SNPs in each population. I am available to you if you have any further question Jean-François Garrier, PhD. DK Shadow says, but Crowd said behavioral genetics is only for finding candidate genes. What's this polygenetic score pseudoscience? Yes, I mean, the classical denials and blurrings of the left, we've heard them, we've debunked them. I don't know if we're in another cycle here. I don't know if Ashley Smart, maybe he wants to approach this question from a different angle. Maybe he wants to show some openness to the truth and to the facts of race. I don't know. I cannot judge him based on his picture, because his picture looks like a, you know, these stock photos that you can purchase to put on your publicities or on websites. He looks like a generic stock photo black man. I don't mean it insultingly. Somehow he looks like he produces picture for iStock photo that you can buy for 5 cents a picture. John Drake says over 100 years of IQ tests across all heavily populated continents is enough evidence for me. The genetic evidence can't be suppressed forever. Fractal Man says, Ashley is a black man, not a cute, possibly a bit wild white girl. Exactly, you got the message today. That is the journalist that I've tried to illustrate on the thumbnail. And I wanted to illustrate how initially I imagined her and how it turned out to be after my Google search. I was disappointed. Great disappointment today. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, don't hesitate to use Entropy to send your super chats. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Cloud Warmer says, JF, I have been reading TRP. I'm absolutely not a subject matter expert. My master's in is a completely different field, but it is one of the most amazing things I've read. And thank you so much. It is stunning. It is a stunning truth, the theory of phenotypic revolution, and the fact that it took a French guy on the internet to find this and write it. It's like kind of a big failure of science, if you will, because there is nothing that we had to gather in terms of facts in the last 30, 40 years that particularly helped me with this book. You can basically produce the revolutionary phenotype the year that Richard Dawkins wrote The Selfish Gene. And yet it didn't happen. So he says, a naive question. Do you think a DNA/TRP tango has happened already and it hasn't been detected? How would we know? Well, if it has happened, it's a very poorly informed tango. So it's not. If it has happened, it's a seed, an initial event. And the question would be, does it spread eventually to... So, did it happen? It may have happened if what the Chinese professor claims is true. Dr. He has claimed in China, just before I released the book, he has claimed that he has modified 2 baby daughters from a father who had HIV because he wanted to give them the protective CCR5 gene that is apparently associated with not catching HIV, even if you're exposed to it. So that would be a first event of a phenotypic revolution. That would be the initiating event. Now, will there be follow-ups or will people give this up? I mean, it seems that the Chinese government has punish this researcher for doing this. So is it going on more than we know? Perhaps there are some isolated, very rich people who can afford already tweaking the genes of their babies. But my guess would be it's probably not happening, simply because I think we would hear about it. I think, it's the internet. On the internet, there's no local jurisdiction. You could brag about that kind of services, and yes, you may be banned from certain countries, but I think the information would be accessible. I don't see it as having been done. I think people have a generally creepy approach to genetic editing, and they feel hesitant to it naturally, and I think it's a good thing. I think it may be what's protecting the first genetic editing on the germline cells to be happening at all. Cloud Warmer continues with another super chat. He says, "The thought pump of thinking of an Earth where DNA is a subservient bygone and a TRP reigns in control and has made the Earth's life forms completely unrecognizable at some point in the future melted my brain for 2 or 3 days. I tried to explain it to people, but gave up and will buy them copies." Yeah, it is very hard to get people to care. And it's amazing that it's hard. Because, hey, we're talking about a theory of the emergence of life. Don't you want to know how life emerged on Earth? Don't you want to understand how we ended up having DNA, RNA, and then proteins? There has to be an explanation for it. Well, here's the explanation. And yeah, you do have to buy them the fucking book, and you do have to basically force it in their hands. It is so sad because when the internet started and up to 2007, 2010, there was this whole excitement around the rationalist and skeptics community, and it was like, oh my God, we're gonna have like super discussions on the internet, and there's going to be a free flow of information. And oh my God, isn't it fascinating that Lawrence Krauss is making a movie with Richard Dawkins? And yeah, let's listen to these endless discussions for hours about science. And I think that we moved to a totally different world, and it sucks. And I think we had that breaking point when basically my generation came in and tried to, oh, all right, try to take serious this idea of a open scientific and intellectual conversation, one in which you would be called out if you try to avoid the truth, if you tried to blur the lines, if because you don't like talking about this or that. If And to me, there was no question. We would pursue the full communication of the truth independently of social consequences. And to me, that was a triumphing achievement of the internet. Of course, the backlash came and started shutting down these discussions. But and so we find ourselves with, it's hard actually to sell the idea of people being interested at all in a discussion, because you say the word truth and people see it as a right-wing dog whistle, or they get triggered. Did you just say truth? I have to go. Holy shit. Man, I loved the delusion we were cradled into back in those days, where we thought there could be a rational discussion, a public one on the internet, with no barriers to entry, no gatekeepers, no censorship, no lying, and where the liars would get called out. Grapes Coda says the world did end in 2012. Ariel Soares says the truth about dot dot dot. Yeah, I mean, basically, the humanity divided into branches, and we're part of the branches that has pursued, if it's true, I'm gonna say it. And yeah, Ariel Suarez says that Stefan Molyneux titled many of his vids that way. Yes. And I think we've solved the truth. We pissed on it. And we, well, not we like me, but humanity as a whole has solved the term truth and the pursuit of it. Fractal Man says, I'm halfway through TRP. Why shouldn't we bring forth TRP? DNA fought against its RNA master, and that worked out well for us. What exactly? That worked out well for us. We are the revolutionary phenotype. Once we are no more the revolutionary phenotype and some other revolutionary phenotype starts farming us, it won't work out well for us. So the best thing that you could argue is that it's going to work out well for them. Now, if you want to be that generous as to eliminate your entire species for the takeover by a separate species and civilization, then I guess you could have an argument, but it would be grounded in what I would characterize as an empathy that doesn't serve you very well, because you have future beings and you're more empathic to these future beings that bear no genetic link to you than you are to your own existence. And that's the point at which evolution will eventually eliminate you. Now, here's the ultimate reason why we don't want TRP. We don't want TRP because it is morally objectionable to be farming something that is free into something that is not. Like, imagine that you have a population on planet Earth, and imagine you go grab them and you force them into some kind of slavery. Any population, let's call them Group B. So we take Group B, we force them into slavery. Now imagine that across the years, every time they complain about being slaves, they don't like it, you kill them. Imagine that somehow your slave masters just scans through his slave population, and every time they don't like it, they don't like the slave arrangement, he kills them. Now imagine that across millions of years, that was to happen. And the end product of it is an evolutionary force that turns your slave into not complaining slaves. In other words, the people who had a brain that made them dislike their current state of affair all were washed away by evolution. And all you have left after a million years is a bunch of slaves who are actually genuinely happy to be slaves. In the same way, the cow is happy to be farmed, you see? Now, if you were to do this, I think you would have done something objectionable. And you have to think about why is that wrong? Because I'm telling you, the slaves at the end, they are actually happy. They're not faking being happy. They're not experiencing harm inside their brain, but hiding it. No, their brain has been modified so that they were happy to be slave. Just like the brain of cows have been modified so that they were happy to be farmed. And ultimately, you have to have something else than a morality based around harm to understand that this kind of slavery example is wrong. But why is it wrong? And I would say, it's not wrong based on the concept of harm, because harm has been evolutionarily kicked out of the brain of your slaves. I think it's wrong because you have turned something that was free into something that is not. You have deceptively domesticated a being against their consent and against their knowledge. So I think that domesticating something that is not may be a moral breach. I'm not sure that continuing the process is a moral breach. not sure that taking chicken and cows today and farming them is a deontological moral breach. I think it's fine because they are what they are today. But I think that the initial event, the fact of taking these wild animals and changing them against their nature, manipulatively for our own benefit, I think that that is wrong. And I think it would be wrong to do it to a human population. So you ask me, Jeff, why shouldn't we do TRP? Why shouldn't we trust an external entity to farm us, to domesticate us? Why shouldn't we domesticate ourselves? And I will answer the same that I would answer to why shouldn't we enslave other people? Why shouldn't we domesticate wild animals? Because you will have taken something that is free and you will have turned it into something not free forever. You will have broken everything in the human phenotypes. We will, anything that you could consider human, you will have broken it. Our creativity, intelligence will all be farmed away from us. The same way the wild survival capabilities of cows and pigs have been farmed away from them. Ariel Suarez says, could we apply this to the chicken being the life forms that they are now, which you argued in favor of a while back? That's the point I was getting into. Basically, continuing the domestication of an already domesticated life form may be okay. May be okay in certain cases. You may think, well, you know, the chicken are already chicken. They've already been stripped of their liberty. So then the choice is between, do I end the existence of the chicken, or do I keep the chicken alive, but live with the fact that it's domesticated? And there you have a choice to make that is very hard, because you know that there was a previous moral breach. But you're in a new situation. You're stuck with the situation. You inherited it from someone else. And I would argue that in this scenario, you are best to keep the chicken alive. Don't do the chicken genocide. It's a edgy position that is not very appreciated by certain vegans and animal rights activists. I advocate for not committing a chicken genocide and keeping the chicken alive. Now, people are talking about the rewilding process. Okay, that is another question. But then what I would argue is, maybe rewilding is possible, maybe it is not. Maybe when it is possible, you can do it. But maybe if it's not yet possible or not desirable for the chicken, or he wouldn't made it, he wouldn't be able to make it, perhaps it is best to keep the chicken alive in farm conditions so that perhaps in a million years from now, we find the technique to slowly bring them back to their wildlife characteristics. Fractalman says, anyways, I like the book. I do have some questions, though. I will try to finish it this weekend. It's amazing that long-term audience members here are still reading the Revolutionary Phenotype. It's a must read. I'm not kidding with this theory, you know. I'm very serious. I've sacrificed my life, social respect of any kind, acceptance in the academia. I've sacrificed yearly salaries. I've sacrificed everything just because I believe this was so good that there would be no way I end up poor or sad if I am the author of this. So read it. It is, I claim that it's not just like, oh yeah, one more scientific theory. I claim that this is the cap on biology. Boom! Great Ape says, it's fairly obvious. Otherwise, people wouldn't be so willing to exchange their lives for the vague goals of some arbitrary leader after being involuntarily conscripted into an army. Exactly. I think it's very instinctive for everyone to understand, yeah, you don't take something that's free and turn them into slaves. Fractal Man says, for all you have given us, JF, I promise I will read it this weekend. I will send comments / questions. But absolutely, I always like new angles on the revolutionary phenotype, so do send them. Go Away says, it's a difficult read. I'm doing one page every night before bed. I should finish by the end of the year. Well, yeah, but Go Away, you always troll, so how do I know that this is even true? I think you may have read The Revolutionary Phenotype years ago. Dead Star says, as much as I believe in fighting TRP, if it happens, it was meant to happen, and its occurrence will have been predetermined since the beginning of our infinite universe. Well, that is a fallacious phrasing of an asymmetry that doesn't exist. Because just try changing your words. What if you were to say, as much as I believe combating DNA, if it happens, it was meant to happen, and its occurrence will have been predetermined since the beginning of our infinite universe. So whether DNA wins or QNA wins, the two branches of possibilities for the future are open to us, and we can choose them right now. We can choose what way humanity takes from here. But we have to do the choice, and we have to share the information and have everyone realize, including scientists first and eventually politicians, that this is no joke. It's happening. The phenotypic revolution is a threat. It's a threat that is a million times more dangerous than any asteroid can ever be. Fractal Man says, seems Dawkins' book may help. Not necessary, though. Yes, reading The Selfish Gene is good practice before reading my book. Great Ape says, genetic engineering is inevitable. There is no escaping this reality. Yes, our species will change profoundly from this, but most people in today's world barely have the intellectual ability to even minimally understand the world in which they live. Humans need an upgrade. Sorry, JF. No, humans don't need an upgrade. They are perfectly fine. Everything that you could appreciate from the world has been arising from DNA-based sexual evolution. So don't come and tell me that we need an upgrade. We need an upgrade because you imagine a future in which we are unfit, but evolution has always carried us toward the unknown future and has always found the right solution to keep ourselves alive. And that's been going on for 4 billion years. Don't stop existing just because you are scared of the unknown. Evolution is there. It cared well for us in the past. It has led to what you are today. And I can guarantee you that you are not what you are today under a phenotypic revolution. If the phenotypic revolution happens, you are much less than what you are complaining about today. Biden says, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? She must not be here.
And so many of you know so much about this as well, and you're committed. And I want to thank all of you here, for including bipartisan elected officials like Representative Governor, Senator Braun, Senator Booker, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie?
Jackie is dead, Joe Biden. She's dead. That was a hilarious moment today where Joe Biden asks if the local politician is there. She's dead. She's dead months ago in a car crash.
Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here.
I thought she was going to be here. Jackie is dead. I'm sorry, Joe. You will have to live the process of, how do they call it? The process of, not guilt, the process of grief. A second time, because you don't remember that your political associate has died already. So you're going to learn it again and learn that she is dead again. Medvedev says US, NATO won't intervene if Russia uses nuke. One moment. Russian Security Council Deputy Chairman Dmitry Medvedev on Tuesday said he doesn't believe the US and NATO would intervene if Russia launched a nuclear strike in Ukraine over fears of a nuclear apocalypse, despite recent comments from US officials. Medvedev, a former Russian president, also reiterated that Moscow believes it has the right to use nuclear weapons if Russia's existence is threatened. Okay, so there keeps having this escalation toward nuclear war. Are they going to do it? I don't know. I tend to assume as a newsman, the news will always be more disappointing than you think. And so whenever you have hope that something might happen, it's not going to happen. That's how I learned to deal with the news since the Trump era, where everyone was excited and I was like, yeah, I want to join the excitement. Let's see something happen. And then nothing was happening. So the news is generally disappointing, which is not a good sales point for a newsman, but that's what it is. The new Italian Prime Minister
Emmanuel Macron. Emmanuel Macron ci ha definiti vomitevoli, cinici.
Why is Twitter video showing me a black video? There used to be a video there. Okay, there it is.
Emmanuel Macron ci ha definiti vomitevoli.
Well, the video is bugs. Twitter video sucks. I mean, it's amazing that they are even considered an evaluation in the billions of dollars. They can't play a video. What she was saying in that video was that she was insulting the president of France because the president of France commented against her. And she just drove into Macron by trying to dunk on him on various issues, including France dominating Africa, printing money for African nations they control, and then draining them from their resources, draining Africa from uranium, and then making their nuclear-powered electricity in France and leaving those African nations without even any sort of electricity. It was kind of a dunk and people were celebrating, but it was also a dunk with basically a fundamentally African position, which is she ends her speech by saying, she says, free Africa, stop draining resources from them. Africa doesn't need the control of France. They just need to be free. Okay, I guess kind of, I guess it gets into the charming the left, and perhaps it's a reason why she had so many votes, but it's kind of not an Italian position on France. Crazy Catman says, Twitter is AIDS, much like Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, all per full-blown AIDS. None of that HIV. Great Ape says, Jeff, evolution has endowed humans with a brain whose cognitive powers are just sufficient enough to begin the process of predictably modifying and enhancing itself. This in itself is our evolutionary path forward. Well, I will combat this, and you have no guarantee that the brains produced by the revolutionary phenotype will be better than your brain right now. So that's the fallacious assumption here. You think we're going to get better brains. How do you know this? If you were a sterile worker hands, let's say you were an insect that is about to become the sterile worker ants, and you used to be an insect that was able to fly, gather food for themselves, do all sorts of complex things as part of sexual courtship, And suddenly, within a few million years, you get turned into a sterile worker drone that knows only how to carry a specific type of food and bring it back to the queen. Do you think that the ant has obtained what you hope to obtain from the revolutionary phenotype? Because the ant became a sterile worker just because it has delegated its genetic control to a queen. And see what the queen has done with them. They are more stupid, they are more robotic, they are more self-sacrificial. They have all aspects of a tool for the queen. And you, with your dream of getting a better and better brain, you will become a tool for the revolutionary phenotype. 8th EU sanction oil price cap will make Kremlin pay for sham referendums. Okay, so the Europe is continuing its escalation of punishment, this time for organizing democratic referendums in the areas of Ukraine that are occupied. I don't think at this point that any further punishment will do anything to Russia except help them. The previous punishments have been basically making the Russian economy boom like nothing before. Dead Star sends a super chat. He says, what is fetishist about believing human life is like a kicked ball flying through the air? The ball doesn't decide where it's going. The kick does. Well, this phrasing is very different from what you were doing earlier. What you were doing earlier is you were assuming determinism pointing toward the revolutionary phenotype. And I just wanted to point to you that if you did the opposite assumption, if you said, okay, you know what will happen? People will attempt the phenotypic revolution, then they will get bombed by a Chad JF president of Chadistan, and they will eventually stop, and it will be DNA forever going from there. Whether the universe is deterministic, the universe could be headed in your scenario or my scenario of Chadistan-based bombing of revolutionary phenotype nations. No matter what happens in the future, whether it's been determined or not doesn't change anything for you and I, because even if we were in a deterministic universe, we're not in one where I can know what the future is. So since I can't know, as far as I'm concerned, as a limited agent in a time slice of the present time, what I do will influence the future state. And even if it was deterministic, it would still be the case that my actions would be part of this deterministic chain that needs to happen for the end to happen. Determinism doesn't mean independence from human action. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. He says, the best part of your book for me was that you didn't do the predictable 105 IQ Terminator's take. Another question. It's true that I presented a true scenario of a phenotypic revolution that I didn't want to be science fiction impressed with lasers and stuff. In fact, I wanted it to be so familiar that it would scare people. I wanted it to be so like the current world that you read chapter 12 and it's like, why is this not happening tomorrow? This could be happening tomorrow. There is no special technology. You just need a computer and then genetic editing. He says, another question, JF. How would TRP jump between DNA life forms and take over? Say TRP occurred in a human. How would it enter the plant world? Would DNA be regulated back to being a storage mechanism? TRP would have two ways to do this. And I kind of leave it opened in the book. How is it that TRP ends up beating the bacteria and beating the DNA-based bacteria and the DNA-based plant? There's two ways TRP can do this. Maybe humans will be so engaged in genetic engineering that basically they will force other life forms with them into this path. So you could have humans say, all right, we've improved humanity so much with genetic editing. Of course, we're going to also improve the plants that we're already actually making GMO, you know. So it could all start like this, and eventually the plant world would be encoded by the central quantome in the same way that humans are encoded. And perhaps certain societies would outperform others by doing so. Because think about it, imagine you have a central intelligence and you can give it the control of human genetics, and okay, it's going to compute, here's the best genes you can have. But if you gave it the control of human genetics and the plants of the environment and the trees and the animals, you could actually make society even more efficient by gaining productivity in terms of agriculture, in terms of the relationship from human society to the animal world. You could fix a lot of things. So it's possible that there are gains to be made by centrally controlling not just humans, but humans as part of the whole ecology of genetic engineering. Now, that is one way, but it doesn't have to be that way. What could happen also is that descendants of humans start to ecologically vary, and they start carrying an other niche than the ape niche, what they have gained in this phenotypic revolution. So consider a descendant of human, of a TRP human, is constantly modifying itself based on its hard drive information. It gives him advantages, but it just turns out that he finds a specific niche of, hey, I don't need to have arms, I don't need to have legs. Oh, well, you can be a little more snake-like. And what if this human eventually just makes a living out of snake life? He could potentially outcompete the snakes. Now, that's over hundreds of millions of years, perhaps, but that could happen. Now, what if some of these humans, they carry TRP into niches that are super different from humans, like plants, mushrooms? Can you make a better mushroom with a fourth layer of the genetic code? Maybe you can. Maybe you cannot compete the other mushrooms that way. So whether the means one or means two will be used, I don't know exactly. I think a mix could very well happen. Valet says, what if the ideal body form is to have tiny little stubs and not be a full snake? Whatever, you know. Well, the snakes have evolutionary rudiments, I believe. I believe that they have rudiments, vestigial organs that suggest that there were limbs at this place. So it's pretty much the case of what happened to the snakes. They still have hips, basically. Or I wouldn't term it hips, but something of that kind. John Drake says, does the subject of RNA by DNA and RNA's subjection of what came before say anything about TRP happening? Well, it says that under certain circumstances, phenotypic revolutions happen. And I found those circumstances. They are the ones described in the book. You need to have a phenotype that has solved the first, second, and third problem of the phenotype, and then solves the fourth problem eventually. But that's all you need. And there's the problem that basically establishing a replicator tango solves the tree problem all at once. And we are currently engaging in a replicator tango. The Bank of England has panicked. 26% of all UK mortgages are variable rate and set for imminent repricing. So the Bank of England decided to go back into quantitative easing, that is money printing. That is very different from what the Fed has been doing. But I think the Fed might follow on this example eventually. Reuters announces that major advertisers, including Dyson, Mazda, and chemicals company Ecolab, have suspended marketing campaigns or removed ads from parts of Twitter because their promotions are appearing alongside tweets soliciting child pornography, the companies told Reuters. And Elon Musk says, extremely concerning. Well, 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 Elon Musk is always looking for what's bad for Twitter. Elon Musk, you have signed a contract of purchase. You have waived your due diligence rights. So that certainly won't qualify as something that you can invoke in your legal case. Your legal case must be very specifically addressing what you think are breaches of the specific contractual agreements. You cannot just invoke some drop of value of Twitter or some market condition to justify pulling out. Climate change activist Isaac Cook has been caught in an interview. She is 16 years old, and people were laughing because she gets interviewed and she gets caught on an apparent hypocrisy in that she was complaining against trips to Fiji, but the host knew that she had been to Fiji recently.
For example,
so we would have to apply to have like approved events to be able to fly for.
Well, that's one thing that you could look at doing.
Am I allowed to go to Fiji? Is that necessary?
In the current climate crisis, I don't think that that's necessary.
When was the last time you were on a plane?
I'm not sure. Maybe a few months ago, to be honest.
Where'd you go?
Fiji.
Izzy!
Okay, so people are holding this against her. It may sound a little hypocritical, but I would argue, in fairness to this young activist, you can be against something and yet you have been forced by the circumstances to do it. Now, she explains later, and I think to her defense, that is a worthy argument. She says, I was forced to go to Fiji. And then the host is asking her, why were you forced? And she says, my parents were going, so I had to go with them. I think it's a good point. You know, you cannot hold a child in an hypocritical stance for something that they didn't control. So I guess you could argue, well, you could have argued against your parent, you could have asked to stay. But all of this is very complicated, perhaps for her, and perhaps she had no choice ultimately to follow. I'm not for holding children in the position of hypocrisy, especially if they have not chosen their circumstance. Acting director of National Hurricane Center shuts down Dunlemon after linking Hurricane Ian to climate change. And by the way, as I'm playing this on Fox News, notice the new Fox News interface? They basically copied YouTube. They did exactly like YouTube. There are now side videos and everything. This is very different from the old interface. Interesting, but it's still just Fox News, so it's not something I will spend much time on. But sometimes they do have news that I want to talk about. Okay, so...
I'm just trying to get...
Dunlemon trying to push the climate change word in a situation that doesn't justify it, and you see the meteo expert is like, I wouldn't do that.
Listen, I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question.
I don't think you can link climate change to any one event. Okay. On the whole, on the cumulative, climate change may be making storms worse, but to link it to any one event, I would caution against that.
Okay, well, listen, I grew up there, and these storms are intensifying. Something is causing them to intensify.
all very fallacious thinking. I grew up there, and there intensifying, that would require some empirical examination. Is that really true? Or is that your impression? Because there are things that I remember as a child. I remember them big like this. And when I see them as an adult, they're like tiny like this. It's unbelievable. There are some memories in my head. I was remembering these things. They were huge. And then I get to see them as adult, and I was like, what? That was it? That was what I was adoring or kind of being fearful of, a little plastic thing. So you have to be careful about what you remember. You may remember things as different when they are not. Secondly, there must be something causing this. There doesn't have to be, and it doesn't have to be. It could be a cycle of nature. And even if there were an increase in hurricane, which I don't think is demonstrated, in fact, the number of hurricanes and their size, I've looked at the studies that didn't seem to find much of a difference. But even if it was increasing, then there would be the question of, is there something causing this, or is that random variation, or is that a cycle of nature that we ignore, that we don't know about? All of these possibilities could be true. You must be a gun nut, closeted liberal woman, embrace the Second Amendment. They may vote for lawmakers who would love nothing more than to disarm the populace, but a growing number of liberal women are embracing the Second Amendment so they can protect themselves. Well, hopefully they can eventually combine this hobby of theirs with voting for the right party. Because there's always these populations that I hear this about the blacks too. You know how Trump wanted to charm the black population? And it's like, yeah, but no matter how much efforts you deploy, they're still going to vote at more than 90% Democrat. But you're really fighting for a small slice when you talk about those very specific black Republicans. It's like, it's really a bizarre phenomenon. It's not something you can have as a voting base. And you have to be careful with these women too. They may hang out with guns at gun places and shoot the guns. I think they're going to keep voting Democrat, unfortunately. Dino Legovic is back as a super chat. I unbanned you, Dino Legovic. I don't know if you saw yesterday's show, but I explained the circumstances and I was eventually able to find you in the ban list. And I was able to unban you. He says, administration fees for the kitchen jar, mon ami. Oh, okay. So do you pay me for having unbanned you? Here, I'll ban you again and then I'll unban you. I'm going to make a living out of those administration fees. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. But I mean, there are some people who specialize in this. They will force you to pay a fee. And then they're going to justify their existence continuously. All of these things that you are forced to do by the law, like when you buy a house, you have to deal with a professional accountant or a professional whatever. I don't remember what's the term for it. A notary. Those are people who live off obligatory administration fees, basically. And that pisses me off. I think we should be in a world where if you want the service of the notary, you can get them, but you pay for them. If you don't want them, you take risks, but you can do it. New book, Trump nearly fired Jared and Ivanka via tweet. Look, I'd love to believe this, but this is the problem always with a loose cannon like Trump. He always nearly does things. Always enough to piss off the left, but also enough to not do it for real. And so we end up having, we get nothing on the right, except the frustration of the left, because they think he was very close to doing it. Like, do something, Trump. Like, fire Jared. Wouldn't that have been based? You know, back in the days where Jared Kushner was starting to distantiate himself from the campaign promises and starting to dilute the Trumpism. Boom, you're fired on Twitter. Why not? Of course, it's fantasy. It's sold to a leftist audience, a book, and promoted on CNN. Why can't we have good things happening? Finally, one last thing. Someone sent me Moderna. It's mRNA Monday. mRNA Monday. And he was saying, what is your opinion on this? Well, it's a video that says, we are now promoting mRNA technology. Here's some information about mRNA technology. And again, the cancer of Twitter cannot play this video. Unbelievable. This fucking website. Unbelievable. But in any case, I don't have a strong opinion on... This is just an educational thing promoting the vaccines. They describe the little tiny lipid bubbles, and here's how we inject mRNA in your cells. Of course, this promotional video does not mention the negative effectiveness of the vaccines. Like, if I was to sell you a car, but I found out that the car, after 3 months, whenever you want to go forward, it goes in reverse. And whenever you want to go in reverse, it goes forward. It seems that you would have to reveal this in any honest publicity. It's like, we're selling you a car. It's going to work perfect for the 3 months, or it may work for the three first months. But then after 3 months, it's going to do exactly the opposite, and you won't be able to use it for transportation. It seems that you would be committing basically fraud, and you would be pursued for dishonest malpractice in commerce if you were to do this in the car industry. So how is it that the Modernas of this world cannot be sued for not revealing the very important fact that their vaccine happens to make you more likely to get the virus after 3 months? Isn't it something we should talk about? Your vaccine is an anti-vaccine. Your vaccine favors the disease. Some random bloke sends a super chat. He says, this was Jared's real agenda. He sends me a link to a YouTube video. Let's see. Even the YouTube video isn't loading? Well, what is happening? It's a browser problem or something? What if I open... I will do something that I hate. I will open Edge. Edge is at the edge of browser function.
I'm just curious.
Jared Kushner prevented President Trump from joining Gab because it allows criticism of Israel. A discussion with Andrew Torba.
I'm going to go ahead and dig in. What kind of people did they want you to ban in order for them to join the platform?
Well, Jared Kushner specifically had problems with people criticizing Jewish people and Zionism and policies related to Israel. I mean, that's specifically what I was told, is you have to do something about these people. He called them Jew haters. I call them Jew criticizers. Some of these people believe that anybody who even criticizes or remotely has any sort of criticism towards Jewish people or towards Israel or towards, you know, international policy, is all of a sudden anti-Semite, right? Which is a totally absurd on its face.
Oh yeah, I remember those days. I remember when this could have happened. And this is where Trump should have said, yes, it's going to happen. I'm going to make it happen. I'm joining Gab. And we could be in a totally different world today. We could be in a world where Twitter has already bankrupted. And basically everyone would be on Gab. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Holy shit. Instead, he has... not pardoned Julian Assange, not pardoned Edward Snowden, not pardoned Lars Ulrich, not joined Gab. So what do we have to brag for from the Trump presidency? Nothing, I say. All right, that is it for tonight, Buzz. Much love, and keep expecting a disappointment from the news, because that's always what it is. Purple Tuna has sent me a DM. He's discussing comments that I've done yesterday about, is it even possible to repair things that are deeply underwater? And he had sent me a link. It seems that they are able to pull the fiber optics cable from the bottom of the ocean, repair them on a boat, and then put them down again. I didn't know this. That's very interesting that he sent me this. And he also says, I don't see how a bit of corrosion to the inside of the natural gas pipeline would be dramatic. The pipe won't be pretty anymore. As long as it does its job to contain the gas it's meant to transport, mission accomplished. Those pipes are coated on the inside. Though the primary purpose of the internal coating is anti-friction, I don't see how an epoxy-based coating wouldn't keep the seawater away from the steel, making corrosion impossible. Those pipes also have sacrificial anodes. My guess is those should prevent corrosion on the inside where the internal coating isn't covering the steel. Well, that is up for discussion. But let me tell you, when you blow a pipe like this, I don't expect the little epoxy coating to be protecting the pipe anymore. In fact, the Kremlin has announced today that the damage is major to the pipeline. So it's going to take at least, at the very least, months before it's operational in any way. And of course, when you blow this, I expect that any layers of plastic covering of any kind will have zero effect, at least on the place of breach, and perhaps even deeper inside the pipe. DK Shadow says, salt water is really bad for metal. The sacrificial anode is only for a little bit of ingress. All right, well, specialist of pipe, argue between one another. I wash my hand of this debate. Bye-bye. Thank you.